In England, we have parties for selling saucy underwear and plastic food containers. In America, apparently, there are mammogram parties. Gary Schweitzer, I'm indebted to you for this nugget of information. You brought it up in a talk here at Coventry University, the European Health Journalism Conference, because, in your view, journalism can be bad for your health.
Well, this was an example of how crazy and incomplete and imbalanced news coverage of various screening tests can be. So there are a number of private hospitals in the U.S. that are now offering what they call mingle and mammogram parties. So they entice women to come in and sip champagne and have fondue and get a massage and then put their breast on the plate for the mammogram. News stories about such events treat them as fun and games, only talking about the potential benefits of such screening. Well, many of these campaigns are specifically targeted for women in their 40s, and we have considerable scientific questions about the evidence of harms versus benefits in women in their 40s considering mammograms. One of our medical editors said, Gary, we need to get this message across to the American public that all screening tests cause harm. Some may also do some good along the way. That is an accurate statement and would probably be a more helpful public health message. I mean, what is the intent? What's the news value of a story like that, except that you think that it's cute how women are being drawn in with fondue and champagne and massages to get their mammograms? These are not trivial issues that should be treated that way.
And really, that is part of the message of healthnewsreview.org, which is your website. Tell me about that.
We just had our fifth anniversary. We review news stories that include a claim of efficacy or safety in any sort of medical intervention. So a treatment, a test, a product, a procedure, a dietary approach, a scanning imaging test. If a story includes such a claim, we review it applying the same 10 standardized criteria every day to all the stories that we review. So those are things like, how did this story do in explaining the cost of this intervention? Now, that's certainly a concern in the U.S., where many of us are paying out of pocket for many of our healthcare services. But I think it's an important consideration, even in countries like Great Britain, where you have national health insurance. To be good citizens, we should be truly informed about the cost of the technologies that we're pursuing. So how did the story do in explaining costs? Did it not only tell us how wonderful this was, but did it quantify the benefits in the most meaningful way? Did it quantify the potential harms of the approach? Did it seem to have a grasp of the quality of the evidence, or did it make a mouse study sound as if it were as significant as a 3-year, 3,000-person randomized clinical trial? Did the story have more than a single source? Did it look at conflicts of interest in the source? Did the story itself seem to be based solely or largely on a news release? Was there really any independent reporting? Did it establish the true novelty of the approach, or is this really old fish in new wrapping? And did it establish the availability of the approach? Or did it make a phase one drug trial sound as if it were about a product that's already available at the corner drugstore?
And you found, certainly in terms of cost and reporting the harm, that the performance of the media wasn't that good.
The numbers are almost identical after 5 years and more than 1,500 stories reviewed, that about 70% of the stories failed to adequately address costs, failed to adequately quantify harms and benefits, failed to adequately evaluate the quality of the evidence. 7 times out of 10, journalists are giving the American public a kid in the candy store view of U.S. healthcare, where 7 times out of 10, things are made to look terrific, risk-free, and without a price tag. Now, I ask you, what kind of a truly informed healthcare consumer population are we fostering with that kind of imbalanced messaging?
It leads to expectations on the part of the public. I want that treatment. Does it also influence the politicians?
Oh, it most certainly does. And we've had a number of very troubling instances in recent years in the U.S. that demonstrate a clash between science and politics, where when scientists trying to promote their evidence-based findings go up against special interests who then complain to their representatives, their lawmakers, who then put pressure on scientists to actually change what the science says. It's just a terrible hijacking of the scientific method, and we've seen it a number of times in the U.S.
And one of the reasons for that is that the lobbyists have a good PR operation, and perhaps the independent scientists, who are not a collective organization, how good is their PR?
Well, in the case of recent breast cancer recommendations that really did emphasize the uncertainties and emphasized what the trade-offs were between the benefits and the harms of mammography for women in their 40s, clearly special interests won the day and forced even healthcare reform legislation in the U.S. to ignore that scientific recommendation and to instead reflect on a 9-year-old recommendation that was more to the liking of the special interests. And the scientists, they weren't thinking about public relations. Maybe they should have. They were thinking public good and science. And those who had a stronger public relations voice won the message.
You can try and get that across to the scientists. You could certainly, I'd have thought, get it across to the journalists to be aware of what the public relations pressures are.
You can. But what you're up against in many newsrooms are staffs that have been cut back because of tough economic times in the news industry. And when fewer people in newsrooms are being asked to do more with less, it is easier to give in to the influence, a powerful influence, of conflicted messages that flood you with ready-made news. Meantime, you're running out of time to complete the story you're working on right now. You have to meet a quota, and you have to get on to the next one. And you simply make the argument, at least, that you don't have time to research this and seek an independent perspective. I feel sorry for those reporters, but I say to their editors or I say to the managers of these news organizations, you may not intend to do so, but you're causing harm. You're causing harm by not completely informing the public about the uncertainties that exist.
Your advice then to the specialist health reporters?
If you truly are a specialist, if you know how to evaluate the evidence, you must find a voice in your newsroom. You must find a voice of reason and a voice for change. It's simply not sufficient anymore, I would say to any of my well-trained colleagues, to just go along to get along. You need to be a leader in the industry and a leader in your newsroom to remind your editors, who don't know as much about these topics as you do, that my recurring message here, that we're doing harm. We may not mean to do so, but we're doing harm. That maybe we are flooding the public with too much news. And I truly believe that. We have an audience, we have a public that is thirsty for just a sip of meaningful health information to help them navigate these very troubled and confusing waters of our own healthcare. And yet, we give them, through so many news messages, we flood them with a fire hose. Well, you can't get a drink from a fire hose. And so maybe these leaders in newsrooms need to remind their editors and their managers that you can do a better job by actually reporting fewer stories and doing each one better.
I won't even ask for your advice for poor saps like me who aren't specialists, but you do email journalists and give them feedback. How does that go down?
There may be a silent majority that we don't hear from, but we don't hear from them. I can count after 5 years on the fingers of both hands, probably, the number of journalists who have strongly voiced their opposition to what we're doing. And I'm extremely gratified by how our work has been embraced. by some leading news organizations and individuals in the U.S. But I think that smart journalists know what they don't know, and they know where they need improvement and help. And many of them are starting to embrace us in exactly the way that we intend to offer ourselves. And that's not as a media basher, but as constructive outreach, that we know what you're up against. And we want to offer you these constructive review comments to show you that there can be a better way.
You do praise some stories.
We do. I feel much better about the days when we can give a five-star score. I take no pleasure in posting reviews of the awful zero-star stories. Nothing would give me more pleasure, frankly, than to put myself out of business and to be able to say we're shutting down this website because we've now reached 90% or more of stories that satisfy these 10 criteria. We have a long way to go. We probably have certainly no more than 15 or 20% of stories get those top scores right now.
Gary Schweitzer, thank you.
Well, thank you for your interest.